Hey there, MMI fans. It's me, Colin, your favorite podcasty producer, singy man. And I'm here to tell you that this is not going to be your average episode of Murder Most Irish. That is right. We're taking you in a time machine back to a few weeks ago when we played the Laughter Lounge Dublin. It was one of our favorite live shows. We all got very, very drunk. Sarah Jane revisited Shergar. I sang some silly songs. And Emma, well, Emma was Emma for 2 hours. You know what I mean. So, thank you so much if you were there. It was a really, really fantastic show. And if you weren't there, really glad that you can hear this recording and sample what we're going on at this live shows. And maybe we might see you soon, somewhere down the road. So, before we kick off this live show, I got a little announcement to make on behalf of our amazing Emma. She's putting on a very, very special night in the Sugar Club in Dublin on October the 15th. She's going to be screening a punk hardcore documentary called Salad Days with a live Zoom Q&A with director Scott Crawford. If you're into punk and hardcore, this is an amazing, amazing experience. And it's an amazing event that I hope all of you will come out and support Emma with. She'd hate me for saying this, but she's put so much work into it. We'd love to see it be an amazing success. So that's right. I'm emotionally blackmailing y'all here right at the top of the hour. But enough of my yakking. If you want to go see Salad Days with Emma, go to www.sugarclub.com and book your tickets for October 15th. And now, on with the live show.
Or listened or been around this before,
yeah.
I'm apologizing in advance,
yeah.
But you will be the butt of every
joke. Every joke.
Every joke you
make. Every single joke.
Because Graham has told me he's not allowed to be the butt of any of my jokes anymore. So I'm on a no Graham joke.
Oh no, we have to make at least one.
Yeah, no, there'll be at least one.
Can I start it off with one?
Yeah, go on.
Graham flooded the kitchen the other day. Graham left the hot tap on for 50 minutes and flooded Sarah's entire kitchen.
Our entire kitchen, yeah. The entire downstairs of our house. But also, it is actually very clean now because it was steaming, piping hot water for like 50 minutes. And actually, I was really nice. Sarah was so chill about it.
Like,
uncharacteristically
yeah,
nice.
Super chill.
And he was like, you were really nice. And that's why I said, that's because it's coming.
Yeah.
Don't you worry. I've got that one in the back pocket.
Sorry, Graham. Where is Graham?
He's over there.
Sorry, Graham.
No. What you start?
Sorry, bestie. Yeah. I'm going to be fucking sickened. Sorry.
So, shall we do housekeeping?
Are we doing that first? Oh, Colin's got his clicker.
Housekeeping.
He's so good at this. He knows what he's doing. You have, what is housekeeping? I can't remember.
We have the lovely Lisa. Is her 50th birthday.
Happy birthday!
She is sitting here.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday! Yay. And
thank
then
you.
We have my gorgeous sister who
yes.
has never paid for a ticket to any of these shows. It was her birthday
Michaela.
At the end of...
Yeah.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Michaela! Happy birthday to you.
Yeah,
that's
no,
amazing.
Happy birthday.
Happy thank you for coming here on your birthday.
No, thank you for coming. And then we just want to say well done to Becky and Dan for getting married.
My sister got married!
And Emma laughed at me because she was like, well done. And
well,
I was
done.
Like,
well done. Well done. Well done.
And I said, we've lost another one. We've lost another one.
But like, he's like the best dude on the planet. And you know how difficult it is for me to say that in any context. So
he's a good
congratulations.
One.
You guys are awesome. Yeah. So very, very, very proud of you both.
But wait until he floods your kitchen. and then we just said on housekeeping, we'd give a life update because we know there hasn't really been a podcast for quite a while.
No, we haven't been doing our job.
Yeah.
At all.
We've kind of hit... it's been a difficult time.
Yeah, we hit a wall. We hit a wall for a little while.
And obviously, Emma's mom, we all know in the last show, we kind of gave a shout out to Emma's mom because she was having a really difficult time medically.
She's now in Portugal getting locked.
She's now in Portugal.
Every day. She's fine. She's on the Bacardi. There's not a bother on her, so she's doing great.
And thankfully, she's cancer-free.
She's cancer-free, so she's doing great.
So...
Yay, Kathleen.
So, as much as I love Kathleen, she has been an absolute rip-roaring cunt and stole my best friend from, like, October of last year.
Yeah, bro, it's been a while.
So,
yeah.
Emma's back.
Yeah.
And when Kathleen comes back from Portugal, Emma's not there. I've moved her out. So Emma's back. We're back together. We're going to get back to business and start doing the show.
We promise.
But also, in all honesty, it's been really difficult because I'm sure all of you feel incredibly burnt out because the world is a fucking nightmare and it's just getting worse every day. And it's so difficult to then sit down and read or write a terrible story.
Yeah.
And so that has actually been kind of pleasant, but also really difficult because we missed you all so much.
We have.
And I have missed sitting on the end of Emma's bed, crying while she tells me terrible stories. and then laughing at Colin as he tries on 6 outfits.
Yeah.
This is it, though. The thing is, the Patreon has been going strong. Remember that, like, Christmas light that I've been pulling out of my arse? Yeah. You want to see the amount of Christmas lights I've been pulling out of my arse on the Patreon? I'm like, just please talk to each other. Yeah. Please talk to each other. Say anything
please be
to
friends.
Each other.
Please be friends. No, but thank you so
Record
much
Record it on your phone, please. Just send me something.
Thank you for continuing to, like, come here, even though we haven't been updating in the last couple of weeks, because we really, really do appreciate it. And that's no bullshit. We actually
yeah,
really
no,
do
we
appreciate
genuinely
it.
Do. We think
we're
there's
always
something wrong
with you.
We're always
shocked by this. So,
yeah.
Thank
like, there
you.
Is something wrong with you all. Like, I just hope
but there's
you know
something
that.
Wrong with us as well, so
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah. No, like, it's fine. We'll all have therapy
together. We're all
together.
Yeah.
And then I just would like to give a big shout out. Emma is doing an amazing thing on the 15th of October. She is hosting a show in the Sugar Club.
Yep.
And it is a documentary called Salad Days. It's a re-release for a 10-year anniversary. And the director reached out and asked her to host it. And she's stepping out of her comfort zone to do that.
Thank you.
And also must have increased her dosage of medication when he asked. But I'm really, really proud of her. And if any of you are interested in hardcore, I am it. I just pretend I am because Emma likes it. And I'm going to go and support her. Tickets are on sale. And I am 100% hawking her shit because I'm so proud of her. And she will be up there by herself. Me and Colin are not with her.
No.
Oh, I'm with her. I'm with her.
He's
I can be dressed like
me,
a bollocks singing punk songs. But here's the funny thing is like... Because, like, you know, Emma's been going through it and all, and I was like, Emma's like, I've been talking to some hardcore guys online. And I've been,
no, not in that way, like music.
Fucks, yeah.
Hardcore music. We need to put music after this because I feel like it sounds bad.
Different strokes
that.
For different folks.
No, hardcore music.
I'd be into the bit of the hardcore myself now.
There is definitely something going on with Emma's Instagram because she is starting to get like very famous hardcore musicians
I don't know what's
have started
going on.
To follow her private Instagram.
Yeah, I don't know what's
and
going on.
And then we all have a WhatsApp group and Colin was like, are you selling your flaps to those
he
men?
Said,
she's selling her flaps to the hardcore lads.
He said I was showing flaps on Instagram. I assure you I'm not showing flaps on Instagram. I just want to get that out there. But yeah, it's amazing. If anybody could come, that'd be great. But obviously, if you can't, don't fucking worry about it. Like, it's just, I don't want to make anybody do anything you don't want to do. But yeah, thank you, Sarah.
From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free.
I'm just
going to
say, you know, I've had a couple of people reach out to me on Instagram just saying thank you for talking about Palestine, but we don't want to be thanked. It's nothing to be thanked about. I don't think we'll ever stop talking about it.
We're never going to stop talking about it. We will be shadow banned on every platform.
Like, we've already been shadow banned a couple of times. I've had, like, Instagram remove and delete accounts from who I was following on Instagram as well because of it. But I honestly couldn't give two fucks. There's a level of horrificness that is currently happening that I can't comprehend anymore. You wake up every day and it's just awfulness after awfulness. And I think the only thing that keeps you going is knowing that other people support.
Yeah.
You know, trying to free these people from what they're currently going through. So thank you to everybody that is trying their best, showing as much as they can, sharing as much as they can, because to be perfectly honest, that's all we can do right now. So
Do you reckon a laughter lounge are like, this is a comedy club?
I already told them what to expect.
What the fuck is
this? But yeah, it's Free Palestine yesterday, today, tomorrow, every fucking day, man. It's Free Palestine. So,
So yeah, let's talk about what's going on in the world other than, so Iman Khalif, she is suing the shit out of Elon Musk.
She is, and JK Rowling, yeah.
And yeah, like a fucking gold medalist. Yep. Like she is incredible.
Yep.
But also her lawsuit is going to cost a lot of money. So she has released, I think, like she's looking for donations today. And although Leo has done some shit in this country, he gave a statement today where he's like, I'd be more than happy to give her some money to support her cause. Yeah. So fair play to him. But yeah, no, like amazing news. Fuck those cunts. Fuck those guys. Like this woman's incredible. Like there has to be shit out of these two motherfuckers.
But there has to be a line where you can't continuously say terrible things about people and get away. Says Emma, who does that every week on the podcast. But that's different. But like to actively try and ruin this woman's life.
Actively.
For no reason. No. Whatsoever. And to also, in that vein, then start denigrating trans people in the same sense. Like, it's not even just that they're saying she's trans and she's not, whatever. But then to start this conversation of, you know, she's not trans. She's not trans. Who fucking cares if she is or she isn't, regardless? That shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she does have a GoFundMe. Is that
she has a GoFundMe. Yeah. It's out there. If you can, please do. Like, I would love to see that South African cunt.
Yeah.
Like, I would just love to see
Like, I feel so sad
it.
Because I know a lot of people, and I'm sure in this room, are huge Harry Potter fans. And to watch J.K. Rowling ruin that entire thing for people is really fucking sad, man. Like, the amount of people that I see walking around with, like, Harry Potter tattoos, I know it meant a lot to the queer community, to the trans community. And then she just came in and was like, hey, I'm fucking insane. Let's ruin everything. So,
but she is of a certain age. Like, she's a Facebook ma. Do you know what I mean? Like,
she is a Facebook ma.
If she didn't have a publicist, she would be sharing, like, missing dog in Tennessee posts. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's just one of those.
So right.
We had a barbecue during the week and my mom came and she just lines up every joke for me. And she was like, you know this, I'm watching this show on Facebook. And I was like, who the fuck is watching a show on Facebook?
Watching Sarah with her ma is an experience. Yeah. I would love to bring you all into a room to watch Sarah with her ma. Sarah's just sitting there going, when's she going to say it?
When's she going to say it? Like, I love her to death, but honestly, she was like, the last time I went out for dinner with my mom, me and Graham and Lily had just come back from like Birmingham and we were in the airport and the airport restaurant had like a little robot that delivered the food to your table. And we all went out for dinner like the next day with my mom and we were telling our niece and nephew about this little robot. And my mom was like, and you took the food off that robot? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, that's somebody's fucking job, Sarah. And I was like, well, there was actually a person behind the robot in case
walking
the robot broke.
Behind the robot, yeah.
I was like, but like you also are using the checkout down at Tesco's. Like,
do you know what? That's actually really funny because that reminds me of something. Everyone here has seen Rocky IV, right?
Oh, my God.
Right? Because when I hear little robot coming with food, I think, like, you know, happy birthday, Polly.
Happy birthday, Polly.
The robot. But I was watching it the other day. It's heavily, heavily implied that Polly is fucking that robot. Because, like, the joke kind of gets, like you know, if we forget about the robot and then, like, halfway through the thing, it's like, oh, there's Polly with his robot. He's like, hey, Polly, you still fucking with that robot? And he's like, hey, Rock, leave her alone. That's my girl.
That joke heavily is implied. For Stephen Mulvaney alone.
There you go, Steve.
Yeah, we're there, yeah.
But people are fucking robots, Colin. That is happening.
Are they?
People are robots.
Yeah. Like, someone in the audience.
No, you said yeah, really, really vehemently right
like,
there.
With absolute volition, yes.
I have seen the robot fucking firsthand.
But that's next. That's next.
Well, shout out to Caroline. Yeah, we love Caroline. Shout out to Caroline Heffernan.
No. And then I said to her, I was like, you actually get a really hard time whenever I do a live show or whenever I'm on the podcast. And she was like, what about your father? And I was like, well, he was never around. Like,
He wasn't causing any problems with me.
I was like, the only joke I have is that he wasn't there. Like, he was fucking in Spain or something. Like, I don't know what you want me to say, woman.
Poor Caroline.
Poor woman.
We love anyway, Caroline.
So, Kulak says no, standing hand in hand with the orange men up north. It's just not in my bingo card this year. Like, has anybody, like, was anybody else just like, sorry, what's happening here?
It's been a shit show for the last 6 months.
Like, I know, but the Kulak says no people just demonstrating how thick they are at every point. It's like my favorite thing.
I know.
Like,
I know.
They also have a little compound in Kulak that went on fire that they set on fire themselves.
What?
Yeah, they have like a little compound that they like made in Kulak near the ESB center where they were setting up for asylum seekers. And I follow their Instagram and their TikTok page.
Of course you do. Yeah, of course you do. Yeah, yeah.
And their Instagram, their TikTok page is literally just people getting high, hanging around pallets in a field.
Are you serious?
Yeah, you know, that's all that's happening. And then, like, there'll be women that come down and have tea with them and they'll be like, look, thank God for Janice fighting the cause. And Janice is
what
just...
cause? Janice is like, I'm just having tea.
Janice is just down having tea being like, do you think you might come home tomorrow, John? Like...
You've children to feed. Yeah.
You've been here for 2 weeks.
We have 6 kids. Like, yeah.
And you smell like campfire and weed. Like, come home.
God.
And it's the honestly the best and the worst. And I just get blocked from, they block me all the time.
Because I just
am
do.
In, like, yeah. being like, do none of you have access to the dentist?
Yeah.
Like.
Not a tooth. Between them.
Not a toot.
Nary a toot.
And every single one of them, sorry to any bald people in the room, but their hairline starts back here. Like, and I'm like, I know it's difficult for men when they lose their hair, but turning to racism.
Like to the far right.
Like, yeah. is an extreme response.
It is a very extreme response. Like, sorry to balds.
Yeah.
Hello, balds. We love
but,
you.
But, you know, fair play to you, because yous haven't turned to the racism.
No, you haven't.
Like, he's have stuck with
you turn
it.
Turn to this
like,
for some reason. Yeah. So, yeah.
But yeah, no, honestly, if you do want to have a good laugh, follow them. So then one of them, they had a campfire because obviously it gets cold in the night and these are camping out.
Hold on, they're camping out.
Oh my God, this compound is never empty. There what? Is at least one unemployed man in it at all times. Yeah, like at least one unemployed man that has not tried to get a job ever.
Yeah.
And one of them fell asleep and their compound went on fire because he let the fire burn and it obviously caught elsewhere.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah, no. So like the fact that they were trying to burn other people's buildings, they set themselves on fire.
They burned their own gaff down.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
And then also like the building of this compound is very much like when you see kids on Halloween. Like they're going around picking up like wood from people's
oh,
gardens.
Like pallets and shit.
Yeah, pallets and
oh,
like
okay.
they've got Tesco's trolleys.
So what are they like, trying to do? I don't understand. Like, what's
it's
the just point?
It's a compound is there beside the ESB area that they want to build or use
so
for asylum seekers.
So they just want to have a camp out. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, honestly.
Happening. Okay, cool. Yeah,
they
yeah.
just want to hang out and be free.
Just hang out with their friends, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah,
yeah.
yeah. You can do that without the racism.
They could do that without the racism.
I easily do that without yeah, the racism. Yeah.
I think they might have been doing that before the racism.
And then they were like, let's stir in.
And then they were like, actually, I think we
guys.
Should really double down and actually do something. And
Jesus
that something,
Christ.
Unfortunately, is racism. And then because they're so unbelievably dumb, they were like, we should go up north. Because although we want Ireland, it should only be for Irish people.
In the
we
north.
Should go and stand mm-hmm. up with the guys who want it to be part of the UK. Like, we should go and stand with them hand in hand and be like, yeah, do you know what? Your enemy
you know,
is my
we
enemy.
Guys can't, we want the same thing. We absolutely
don't want the same thing.
Like, it is the exact opposite yeah. of what we want.
Imagine if one of them was like, what do you think of Brexit? Like, and the Northern Irish guys would be like, it's the fucking worst thing ever.
We hate it. And then like, he's like, well, we
no,
love
no, they,
it.
The guy, they'd be like, this is great. Brexit's fantastic. And then us down here be like, that, like those guys from Kulak be like, Brexit's a load of shit.
What the fuck?
Like,
everybody just fucking calm down. Everybody just calm down. That's how I feel.
Yeah, no, I actually, like, as much as I hate the racist side of them, I love the idiot side of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I know.
Like, and they are a dying breed. Like, yeah. they are only inbreeding with each other.
Yeah.
And that genetically will die out eventually. So.
And, like, you know, as much as it is upsetting and sad and awful, there are so many more people that are good and kind, and you kind of just have to focus on that. Like
100%.
Grip onto that shit just so yeah. that there's good,
the amount
kind.
Of people in the UK over the past 2 weeks that were out supporting yep. their neighbourhoods.
Rebuilding mosques and
standing with like their neighbours and their yeah. neighbours who are Muslim and
phenomenal
people of colour
humans.
And being like, do you know what, this isn't our community and this isn't what we stand for.
Yep.
And it was just, and the amount of fucking fascists and racists and Nazis that got fucking thrown out of places
yep.
was just beautiful. Oh, the man getting hit with the rock in the head and then the dick. Oh, the best video ever made.
Stunning.
Oh.
Man gets hit with football in the groin was the greatest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Football in the groin.
Just honestly.
Like, it was like bang, 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 bang. Like, it didn't end. It was stunning.
Like, honestly, on my deathbed, that will be my last image. Like, the happiest moment of my life. Like, as I said, I follow all these cunts on TikTok. And so that video came up in live to me, and I was like,
Sorry. Sarah sent it to me, and I was like, this is the most phenomenal piece of art I've ever seen in my life. This is perfection.
Like, I showed it to Graham, and Graham was like, it's like that Simpson hand small man.
Yeah. Man gets hit with football in the groin. It's the greatest thing ever. I'm obsessed with it. Like,
honestly, one of the best moments of my life.
Hey, don't be a racist.
Did you also see, I know nobody in here has ever
Can I just interrupt and say, the fact that you were sitting across from us dressed like Macho Man is not lost on me.
That's why I don't say much. I don't have to say much, because I just sit here.
What were we going to say? Sorry.
I was going to say, I don't know that you watch football in here, but at the European Championship.
Boo.
Hey, listen, this is the same thing. But right, there was the English supporters and the Netherlands supporters were having a big brawl. Did you see this?
I did.
And two lads just started walloping each other. Like, they met across the thing, they came together like two gladiators, started battering each other in the face, and then they realised they were both English. And they gave each other the most satisfying hug anyone ever gave each other.
I like, see this.
While a fucking, where was the European Championship? Europe was burning around them, and they were like, it was incredible. It was like, they
I have
like,
not seen that. I
will
that
share
over.
It with you.
Please
on the
do.
Instagrams.
That yes. is hilarious.
Because Emma has me blocked off WhatsApp.
Yeah, I don't have you blocked.
Well,
your
there's something funny going on
with
WhatsApp, because I'm sending her entertaining videos and she's like, I can't see them.
There's something wrong with your phone, because you're sending me videos and
she
I'm just pretending I'm watching
also,
them.
Also, by entertaining, he means deeply offensive.
You know, they are deeply offensive.
Rude, mean videos about me. Listen, that's what you're sending.
I have to entertain myself some way. You've been away for 6 months. I'm going down fucking weird rabbit holes of like YouTube movies and people with big chins.
Yeah, no, your videos are not working. I'm just doing
no,
the same thing
not.
I do
okay,
with my mom.
Okay,
she's
okay.
the same.
Because
okay,
my
cool.
mom is shadow banned on my WhatsApp. And I don't, none of her videos automatically download in my
what?
WhatsApp. Yeah. She sends some shit you don't want on your phone.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
And I just always say, ha ha ha,
like,
LOL.
Is the vaccine
and
turning
never
children
even
into
it?
Werewolves? Is that kind of shit?
Yeah,
is
no,
it?
I don't okay. open any of the videos. When I got diagnosed with my kidney disease, she just sent me loads of stuff about turmeric.
Oh, they love turmeric.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
my God.
What you need to do is you need to wrap tinfoil around your waist.
Our older sister fucking loves turmeric.
Yeah,
that's her best
yeah.
friend, right? Not this sister, our older sister.
Yeah,
she's
and
like,
so I just put her down and none of her videos downloaded. And it's the best thing I ever did, because I send a lot of messages just going, oh, very good.
Thumbs up. Yeah.
But then when I see her, I'm like, and she'll talk to me about the video, and I'm like, yeah.
Definitely watch
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I definitely watched it.
100% watch that.
Very
yeah.
helpful. So, in terms of, we have obviously got the merch table outside, and we are very sorry there is no new merch. Like,
no.
She hasn't got a job, and I can't keep supporting this bitch.
I have poverty. I'm in abject poverty.
So, but our wonderful friend Aisling is sending a zine about her chronic illness, and I'm laughing because today I was like, a chronic illness, and Emma was like, well, you have one of them now.
Yeah, she does.
And I was like, thanks.
She does have a chronic illness.
Yeah.
So, I mean, oh, you
fuck
don't
off.
Colin, you don't.
I have a fucking jam card. Let's get it out.
Do you all know about Colin's jam card?
Do you know what a jam card is?
Yeah, okay.
Colin, he got one.
Colin has one. And whenever Emma is being mean to him, he just holds up
the jam card. Jam stands for just a minute. So it basically means if you're like, some people have like hidden disabilities, and it's like just a minute. So if I'm like, shut the fuck up, Colin, he just holds up the jam card. And he also printed
sense.
Off how many bullet points of a fucking paragraph did you print off to put in the back of the jam card?
I put it a little small piece of information that I laminated to let people know that I have ADHD and I am prone to just stopping in the middle of the street.
No.
So
he was like, they can see my jam card
and look at my little paragraph.
No, he's like, I'm just going to hold this up. I was like, Colin, that is about 50 lines of text. Nobody is, it's this small and nobody is reading that.
And he was like, I'm just going to hold it up because when I'm getting off the train, it takes me a while to get all my stuff.
It does.
And she was annihilating this cunt. And I was like, oh, that's very good. Yeah, that's very helpful.
I was like, get the fuck off the train. Just get your shit and get off the train.
But you know what? Shit is making sense now, because what I was doing is, because obviously I haven't seen her, I was sending her pictures of the jam card on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And now suddenly, you can't get my pictures on WhatsApp. I'm just saying.
No, maybe. It's both of us though, so maybe we both have
jam card discrimination shit going on over on this couch.
But anyway, on Ashton's Zine, it is available outside, and it's excellent, and it's wonderful, and if you can support her, please do.
Please do.
And then Australian Breakdancer.
Rachel Reagan.
Rachel? I would love the confidence of Rachel Reagan.
But, like, is it, like, a social experiment? I feel like something is going on. I don't understand.
Did anybody watch, like, the B-roll of her when she was, like, walking to class?
No.
Oh, my God, it's the best thing.
She has a PhD in breakdancing.
She has a PhD in body movement.
What?
Yeah,
okay.
Just like Colin.
Apologies to anybody that has a PhD in body movement. Well done.
And there was, like, a whole, like, roll of, like, it was like a video of her before she got to the Olympics that was obviously done for some like news article in Australia. And she was like wearing this like oversized suede brown jacket. But she obviously knew she was being like filmed and she's like walking like.
And like I was a lecture, like a professor.
What the fuck is going on? And then she was like in the class teaching like people and there was just loads of video of the kids going.
She's like, spin on your head. They're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then God love her. Like, she showed up at that Olympics, and I was like, sorry.
I just feel like it's a social experiment. I can't understand.
The best moment for me was the, like, kangaroo hop. Like, that one. Like, the Olympics having breakdancing in it for me was enough to be like, this is
weird. Is this the first year?
This is the first year.
Oh. And last,
oh, really?
Bro. And last, no. I'd say, yeah.
Like, me and Graham did watch the final just out of pure curiosity because, like, to be fair, Rachel Reagan made me watch the rest.
100%. Like, she did what she had to do.
She was so shit. Like, I don't know anything about breakdancing, but I know it's better than that.
Yeah.
Like, I was expecting her to bring out cardboard and put it down.
I was expecting anything other than what happened.
Exactly, like, yeah. But God love her. And people kept putting that audio over where they were like, this is hip hop. You see how it's loose?
Yeah. What's that lady's name? Renata Bliss.
Yeah.
That's the one that I kept seeing. It was like they put the Renata Bliss voiceover over her. I don't know. I just feel like she's either done something really ingenious or something really shitty. And I don't know which one it is. The crowd has spoken. The people have spoken. It's really
These are
shitty.
Like Romans. These are like...
I tell you, she triggered the shit out of my father. My father was like, and you get the same medal for doing that as you do for running the marathon. He was fucking disgusted. He was.
Oh my God.
He's not wrong.
He's
spoken.
But I think every outfella like in the country was doing that as well. Jesus. It's all gone to shite, isn't it?
It was very confusing for old people.
This is it.
Yeah, they were like breakdancing and a man boxer. Sorry, what's going on?
But this is it. Like, I feel like I got through to my mother though, because my mother just went, "It's not a man though."
Oh, that's good!
Yay!
Yeah, Pauline.
Not a man.
Aww.
Her sixth glass
you
of vodka.
You have the one good mother.
I do.
So I think that's everything for me. You wanted to talk about femicide.
Oh God. Can we just say, like, I'm not, Sarah's taking over tonight. She's going to do her case. I'm not doing a case because it's the laughter lounge and I usually bring everything down in here and in life in general. So I'm not doing a case, but I did just want to talk about the fact that a lot of shit has been happening, especially obviously in the UK and the United States regarding the immigrant population and our migrant populations. And they're using the murder of women as an excuse to peddle their racist bullshit. And it's very, very frustrating to be a part of. We haven't done the podcast in a little while, so we haven't talked about it,
yeah,
obviously. But it's not fallen under our radar. Sarah Jane and I are constantly talking about it. So just, you know, just so we know, we're aware that making these statements about migrant people and immigrant people and using women as an excuse to do it,
yeah,
is the most frustrating fucking thing on the planet. Like, I can't deal with it.
Yeah, no, it's... an,
they're,
it's,
like, killing our women. They're killing our... Yeah, but white people are killing your fucking women. You're not doing anything.
No.
Like, at all. So... just so you know, we're not ignoring anything. We're not pretending it's not happening. We're deeply frustrated to watch the murder of a family, nearly an entire family, a mother and two children, by a white man with a fucking bow and arrow, to be swept under the carpet, and then a couple of weeks later for race riots to happen over the murder of three young girls. These young girls' names were erased from,
yeah,
the,
erased,
from the conversation. It's just frustrating and angering, and we are not ignoring it, and we're not forgetting it. So that's all I wanted to say, because I can't pretend it's not happening, man. So fuck racists is all I will say. Yeah.
All right.
Brought it down again. I'm really
she
good at
that. She does do that. She does do that. Let's start the show.
Hey, Colin, tell us about the Patreon.
Sure thing, Lily Pops. Hey there, MMI fans. It's me, Colin, and do I have news for you. It's all going down over at www.patreon.com/murdermostirish, where we've totally revamped our Patreon offering for you mega fans. That's right. Now all of your favorite Patreon stuff can be found in one place as we bring you our MMI Super Show exclusively for Patreon, featuring all the usual banter and chat between Emma and Sarah Jane, plus me thrown into the bargain, along with Lily's Tales, Maximina's Bell Bag, and some surprises along the way. But that's not all. Every single week, due to popular demand, we will be bringing you a full-length story, whether it be Miscellaneous Most Irish for those cases that just don't fit on the main show, Murder Most International for those cases you guys have been crying out for, or even Music Most Awesome, where we talk about our favorite albums. But wait, there's even more! How about MMI Drive, the fan favorite podcast show where Emma and Sarah Jane drive around Dublin talking about all sorts of shite, plus our monthly Ask Me Arse segment, where you get to pick the brains of the girls and maybe even ask me a question or two. So what are you waiting for? Come on over to www.patreon.com/murdermostirish and join in the fun for only €6 a month.
Give my mammy €6.
Can we just talk about the visual that Colin made for this story?
Colin, all I could hear last night in the room was Colin giggling to himself, and I was like, what's he doing?
Colin sent me this PowerPoint to my work laptop today. And I saw this PowerPoint, and I was like, I am making that into a print. Because this is just wonderful. This guy's eyes on the end, fizzy as fuck.
Fizzy-eyed.
Like,
I just love that the horse is standing right beside them.
I love that too. Like, I love everything about it. Right, so.
Is that Shergar?
No, that okay. is a copyright-free Canva horse.
She didn't even get the real Shergar.
It's the real Ra, though. It's the real Ra.
Oh, last thing before we move on, talking about the Ra, go see Kneecap.
Oh, yeah, go
see
Kneecap. It's great.
Like, it's so fucking good.
It's great.
Me and Emma went on the hop. Well, I did. Emma doesn't have a job. and went to see Kneecap, and it was fucking fantastic.
It's fantastic.
And it's so, actually, the lads are unbelievably good in it.
Can we just say, Sarah Jane, I don't know how many guys have seen it, but Sarah Jane and I were in the cinema. We were in the second last row, and this woman walked in with a toddler.
A toddler.
And literally, she sat down, and we were like, what the fuck? And then she got up and left. And within 3 seconds, this really graphic sex scene started happening. I was like, get your fucking kid out of here.
It's a really graphic sex scene where they're like, Chucky Erlo! Like, and it's like, woman had a
it's like
child.
Fucking three-year-old behind us.
And I was like, she's
clearly
in the
meant to go to that purple crayon movie or whatever.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be a cunt and be like, are you in the right screen? But I was like, she's in the wrong screen. She's in the wrong screen.
She did realize it in time. She did realize it.
Yeah, thank God. She realized
it. I mean, they were huff and coke, like there was no tomorrow, yeah, but like, she realizes it before the sex scene. Yeah. So.
Okay, so we're going to do Shergar. So let's get started. So we don't want to be sued. So the references are Wikipedia, my brain, because I know everything about this story. The Indo Daily Podcast. I'm sorry, this or the reference is so fucking bizarre.
What is it?
There is a podcast on the BBC presented by Vanilla Ice.
Yeah. I know this one.
Called Sports Strangest Crimes.
Yeah, I know this one, yeah.
And when I tell you it is a riot.
Does he, like, properly present
it? He properly presents it.
Because I remember seeing that and I didn't know if it was just, like, he came in and went, just on Vanilla Ice, and then they actually got a real person to do the rest of the thing.
Yeah, no. Okay. I asked Graham to proofread this today, and he was like, do you mean Vanilla Ice? And I was like, yeah.
I mean, like, Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice, and he's fucking fantastic.
My Vanilla
Fair
Ice.
Didn't he go bankrupt?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than likely.
And Michaela knows every word to that song. If you want her to sing it later. Like, I mean,
Michaela would absolutely sing it later.
Now, before we move forward with the story of Shergar, we must talk about another Irish legend, Mr. Ben Dunn. So, Mr. Ben Dunn was kidnapped on October 16, 1981. Ben Dunn was kidnapped by a group calling themselves the Irish National Liberation Army, or the INLA for us who are in the know. On that Friday morning, Dunn was on his way to open a new supermarket in Portadown, County Armagh, when he was kidnapped by the INLA. Dunn was driving northwards when a car coming into the opposite direction overtook a lorry and blocked the path of the vehicle. The lorry stopped and Dunn swerved to avoid the collision, believing an accident had occurred. Dunn stopped, he got out of his car. It's very nice of him.
Very nice. Very kind.
I would have just kept driving.
Sarah just would have put her hand on the horn.
You know, anybody that listens to me on the Patreon knows how road bad my road rage is.
Road rage, yeah.
Like, it's just a lot of me being like, you're not driving a fucking bus. The other car reversed towards him and the four men armed with at least one rifle got out, surrounded Dunn and then put him in the car and left the scene. They held him for a total of 7 days before releasing him after a ransom of approximately £1 million was paid. His friend and fellow businessman, Patrick Gallagher, apparently paid his £1 million ransom, not his family. But the claim is in disrepute, as during an interview in the Irish Times, Mr. Dunn said, following his release after 6 days in captivity, he asked his father, Mr. Ben Dunn Sr., and his friend, Noel Fox, who he had suggested the kidnappers use as an intermediary, if they had paid the gang, and both of them denied it.
Oh.
Both of them were like, no, Ben.
I feel like I'm the Ben Dunn of my
family. We don't want to spend any money to get you. You know, I feel like Michaela would be like, keep her. Like, it's cool. You'll get rid of her. You just won't want her in a couple of days. Now, by all accounts, the family did want to get Ben back.
Did they, though?
As apparently there were two attempts by the Dunn family to deliver two individual payments of £500,000. The gang, who were believed to be members of the Provisional IRA, said that these attempts were foiled by the Garda and the RUC. Now, the Garda said that they didn't foil them, but the RUC said that the Garda were involved in foiling them.
I don't believe anybody.
I don't believe anybody either. Yeah. The RUC were very concerned about the INLA getting access to that level of funding and also setting a precedent in Ireland for kidnapping. Actually, I didn't realise until I was looking at this, but the INLA had a kidnapping subsection of the group.
Okay.
And during this time, they tried to kidnap like two other people.
Didn't they kidnap the guy from Quinsworth or something?
Yeah. And then they tried to kidnap one other person and that was foiled.
Just loads of grocery store owners getting fucking kidnapped.
Well, I mean, also during this time, like the recession, like there is fuck all millionaires.
It's like four.
Yeah, like
they
just
all
fucking
own, like,
none.
Fucking duns.
Yeah, like I think at that time you're talking like unemployment's about 120,000 people. Which,
I thought you were like 120% everybody. The whole fucking country. There isn't everybody. An unemployed person
in
this fucking show.
Well, I know in my house it was 120%. We're unemployed. Like 120,000 doesn't say, but actually the population then is much smaller. So that's like a very high amount of people to be unemployed. So I don't think we'll ever know if the money was paid or not. But Ben says he had a lovely time with the lads. But that clearly he had some demons from it, because then he was outed from his company after an arrest in 1992 when Ben was arrested in Orlando, Florida for cocaine possession. His arrest was made and headlines were international. It had significant repercussions for his professional and personal life because the Dunn family were like, you're out.
I know, they're fucking sick of him.
Like, they were
Ben,
you're out. But he went on to find God. And love of gyms, really loves gyms.
Oh, fuck, the gyms. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Along with terrible but somehow brilliant radio adverts. Anybody who's
He's like, everybody else is shit. Literally. We're the best. Like, that was his literal ads. Like,
Ben Dunn's ads were my favourite thing in the world.
They were so good.
Fly fit, get the fuck.
they were literally like, and they just came out of nowhere. They just appeared on the radio.
Yeah.
Do you go to Flyfit? Well, you probably have fucking genital warts. You'd want to check yourself now the next time you have a shower.
Those ads were the best.
I was like, I go to Flyfit.
But every time I heard one, I was like, can he do that?
You know, his ads.
Is he allowed to do that?
We're so on the note. Like, they were so on the
like
nose.
Like, he was
like,
so
was
angry
allowed
at Flyfit constantly. Flyfit was like,
and then there
enemy
was another one. The one that went bankrupt beside us, Graham, that I told you had died so we didn't have to pay the direct debit anymore.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
That's true.
I might be joking. She actually did that. I remember when,
like,
she did that.
We signed up for the gym. I am not a gym person.
No.
And the fucking contract was ironclad. Like, we could not get out of this contract. And I was like, I'm just going to have to make something up. And I didn't tell Graham, but I just rang and I was like, listen, my husband died.
That's it.
Like,
he's dead.
I'm so sorry. But
is that,
like,
the one beside, but right beside me?
Yeah, the one right beside us.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, and I can't talk about this anymore because I'm so upset. But I can't afford €24 a month.
It was so cheap as well. Like, it was so cheap.
I just can't afford it. And without my husband providing, you know. And they were like, oh my God, we're so sorry. And then the audacity, we got engaged. And I was like, we should join that gym again.
Yeah, you were like, let's go back.
I was like, let's go back. And then I went once and threw up and never went back again.
Same, bro.
So anyway, RIP Big Ben. One love, jab less.
Okay,
He died.
That's the end of that story.
Yeah, when we were in Cork, he had died. And I told the Ben Dunn story in Cork and it didn't go down well. A couple of people in the room that were like...
They love Duns.
They were literally like, a man is dead. And I was like, I know, but you could fucking knock some crack out of it. Like, anyway. So, because obviously they tried to kidnap Ben Dunn and it didn't go well and they had to hold the cunt for 7 days. And we're not really sure if they got the amount of money they were expecting or if they got any money. The IRA were like, we need to do something else, but also we can't kill a person if they don't give us the money because we also are now going into government in the Sinn Féin. So they were like, the press of killing a human being...
Allegedly.
Will absolutely shoot us in the foot.
I need you to allegedly as much as possible during this, please.
Like, will absolutely shoot us in the foot with getting the, like, political party up and running and people really voting for us because we're kidnapping people and killing them. And also, we're kidnapping people that are giving people jobs and there are none to have. So, they decided to kidnap a horse.
I fucking love Ireland. Yeah, it's the best life.
Sugar was born on the 3rd of March, 1978. They talk about this horse as if it was the second coming of Christ. Like, so, he was an Irish bred, British trained thoroughbred, and he was a very successful season in 1981. The Prince Sharkam Al Soon, I can't pronounce
it. Oh, here we go.
Al Hussein.
Yeah.
All right. Known by the religious title of Malana Hazar Iman. and Aga Khan to his buds.
That's it.
So that's what we're going to call him, because we clearly are friends with him. He is the 49th and current Imam of Nazari, a denomination of Shia Islam. Apparently he has 15 million people that think he is like the coming of God.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, so apparently within their like religious beliefs, that person that sits like in that role is...
Taylor Swift fans.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, I love Taylor. Yeah.
Anyway, he's been in that position since the 11th of July, 1957. Aga Khan's net worth has been estimated at $13 billion, a shit ton of money. And
hold on, billion or million?
Billion.
Fuck, man.
He shouldn't exist.
That is insane.
Yeah. You might get a job in the IRA.
If there's anyone here from the actual RA...
She's looking for a job.
Looking for a job.
Anyway, he, at the time of Shergar being born, Aga Khan is the one and only stakeholder in this horse. He's like paid to have this horse produced. So he owns Shergar outright. So he is the main stakeholder, but as time goes on, he's not the only one. So let's talk about the birth and breeding of Shergar, because it's very important. Shergar was born, as I said... Right? On March 3rd, 1978, at the Aga Khan Ballymanny Stud in County Kildare. He was sired by... Kildare.
Just I love Kildare.
So many weird horse people in Kildare.
They love a horse. You love a horse out there, you do.
They fucking love horses.
Man. You're all about them.
He was sired by the great stallion, great nephew of the Mer Charmaine. Bred by the Aga Khan, Shergar was destined for greatness in the world of thoroughbred racing. Shergar was trained by Sir Michael Stout at Newmarket in 1970 to 1980. He was the most prestigious training facility in the United Kingdom.
Do you ever think he was like super stressed out about the fact that everybody was like, you're going to be amazing?
The horse?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I would be... super like, stressed out.
Yeah, no, if someone was like, you're going to do great, I'm like, I don't know.
They're like, here's the Aga Khan, and the horse's like, I don't know what that is. Someone but like, I feel like, what?
He was like, you want to see this fucking horse that's after coming out with this other fucking, Jesus fucking Christ.
Yeah, they're all about
this fucking breath
horse
away when they saw it.
Yeah, no. So he was training in this facility. His training and natural talent for being sexy was quickly caught... He quickly caught the attention of the world, which is true, actually. People started to write about this horse before he started to fucking run. Anyway, Shergar made his racing debut on September 19th at the Curragh Racecourse in Ireland. He won his first race easily by 2.5 lengths, which is an impressive performance, and it marked a very promising young horse to watch. So the other thing is, during this time, we are heavily in recession in the Republic of Ireland. And Shergar becomes like a fucking sure thing. So in the beginning, I would love, you know that fucking Back to the Future?
Yeah.
You know the one where Biff gets the sports book?
Oh, he gets
book?
The book? The almanac?
Oh my God, I would go back before Shergar ran in the Curragh and I would put so much fucking money on him. Like, I'd
By
be
the
like...
way, speaking of almanac, my mother is obsessed with this thing called Elmore's Almanac. Have you guys ever heard of this? Dude, everything that happens in the planet, she's like, Al Moore said that. I'm like, no, he didn't.
What are you talking about?
It's like an almanac that he wrote. Yeah, it's like an almanac, but he gives like predictions of the future.
Oh.
And she's like, the women will defile themselves like dogs.
That's my favorite one. That's
fuck, Kathleen?
Well, she's not wrong.
And the women will defile themselves like dogs, Emma.
That's what she says to me all the time.
Anyway, so... he's got a 3-year-old season. It starts in 1981. He's got a win in the Epsom Derby on the 3rd of June, 1981. Shergar won the Epsom Derby by staggering 10 lengths, the largest win-in margin in the race's history still to date. No one has ever beat it. No one, no horse.
No horse.
His performance was so dominant that jockey Walter Swinburne, what a name.
Great name.
A great name.
Love a name.
Famously eased him up before the finishing line and he still set a record. So Walter was like, this horse is a fucking business.
It's a business.
I'm just going to slow it down, baby. He pulled back and he was like, yeah, Shergar, you got this. The Irish Derby, Shergar continued his winning streak by capturing the Irish Derby at the Curragh on June 27, 1981, winning by 4 lengths. King George and Queen Elizabeth Stakes on July 25th, 1981, Shergar won both those races at Ascot, defeating older horses with ease and further solidifying his status to be the best 3-year-old of
best
his generation.
Best horse ever.
He's the best He's horse the best in horse the world. Ever. There's never been a better horse. Other victories, Shergar also won the Chester Vase and the Sandown Classic Trial, demonstrating his versatility and speed and his sexiness.
His sexiness. Yeah. His beautiful mane.
He was so beautiful.
I keep looking at this, but that's not him. So
well, he kind of looked like that. Would you like me to describe what Shergar looked like?
Like that?
No?
No? Okay. No. What do you look like?
So Shergar was this colour. Okay. He had a white streak in his face, but he also had 4 white socks. Aww. That were exactly the same height. So he was like just a beautiful horse.
Yeah. R.I.P.
He was very sexy. He wore a lovely bikini. In St. Ledger Lakes in retirement, despite expectations, Shergar was entered in St. Ledger's Lakes, but was then withdrawn and retired from racing at the end of that season. So nothing happened to him. He didn't slow down. He managed to continue to like win races. But Aga Khan pretty much was like, he's worth more money popping out those babies.
Yeah.
I need to get this horse riding other horses.
Yeah.
And I need to do it quick. So he was like, he's actually worth a lot more money if I stop doing that and I put him out to stud. So Aga Khan took the decision to retire him and ride him. To have sex with him, to stud him in Ireland. Following Shergar's Epsom Derby win, a group of US horse-owned owners had offered $40 million to syndicate the horse, but Aga Khan turned down the offer. And
£40 million
for the fucking horse.
That's insane.
I know. Fair play to him. The Aga Khan turned down the offer and instead decided to syndicate Shergar for $10 million at £250,000 for each of the 40 shares, a record price at the time. The Aga Khan himself kept 6 shares and the others were sold individually to buyers from 9 countries. The shareholders had the option each year of selecting a mare to be covered or selling that option on. So pretty much they were like, this is my mare, your horse is going to ride it. And I give you $250,000 a share to do that. Or I sell that option on to other horse owners. So the stud fees were £60,000 to £80,000 per cover, which meant that the shareholders could expect to make a profit from the stud within 4 years. That's the end of that.
The figures are done.
That's my ADHD in full blown action. So... Shergar won a phenomenal number of races, and as noted above, he did it in lengths ahead of other horses. But he was also a really good-natured and well-mannered horse.
Oh, he was a good guy.
He was a good guy. He was noted to have been an easy to break in and a gentle lover.
I was about to ask what is easy to break in the most genuine way, and then you ended the sentence with that.
Sorry, I just like to say, I wrote, he was noted to have been easy to break in and train, and then in bowls I put, this is how I describe Graham.
Sorry, Graham.
That's the only joke I wrote about you. Anyway, he won the European Award in 1981 of European Horse of the Year.
And he doesn't even know.
He
hasn't got a fucking clue what's going on.
He doesn't even know. Shergar was named European Horse of the Year, an honour recognising his outstanding performances on the track. He received a time form rating of 140 to be one of the highest ever awarded, reflecting his exceptional talent and achievements. So the Aga Khan and Stout, who are the trainer, considered entering Shergar into the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe that autumn, but decided that he needed one more race to prepare. They entered him into what would be his final race, which is St. Ledger's Stakes at Doncaster in September 1981. Swinburne was the jockey again, and 10 days before the race, a story broke that the horse wasn't really running that well and he was mullish, which is how I describe myself all the time. Stout stated that the rumours were untrue. He said, how dare you speak about my beautiful horse in such a manner.
Do not speak about my horse like that in any context.
He's a gentle lover and a beautiful horse. And he's running great. Shergar was running well in the race, although the soft ground was not to his liking. But on the final straight, when Swinburne tried to get him to accelerate to the front, the horse just didn't respond and Shergar came in fourth at 11.5 lengths. he was a cut above the winner, and I think
that's still very good.
That's very good.
Well done.
Yeah, that's no, you sound like my mum whenever she watches any sports. But the other players were very good.
They were very good.
Like, they tried their best.
He tried his best.
Anyway, surprised by the manner of loss, Stout and the Aga Khan ran a series of tests on Shergar. All showed the horse was in good health, and he worked well in the training after the race. Unwilling to risk the horse without knowing what had happened, Aga Khan did not enter him into the arc, instead retired him completely to Ballymoney Stud near the Curragh. He later explained to the racing journalist, he was just an exceptional athlete all through the spring and summer. He completely dominated the European racing in a very dramatic manner, and he had run uncharacteristically in St. Ledger. We knew something had gone wrong, but we didn't know what it was, so it was an easy decision to retire him before the arc. The Aga Khan turned down large offers to push Shergar and Stud in the US, and it just decided he was going to fucking rent the shit out of that horse's sperm. So he came back to Ireland, and he was a national hero in Ireland.
He was.
He was one of the most recognisable sports personalities.
Nice fucking country. Sonia Sullivan, sure.
Sorry, I wrote horse or human.
They loved him, they did.
Horse or human in Ireland. So fucking Irish. In 1982, his only Russian season, Shergar covered 44 mares, which had 36 foals.
Holy fuck!
17 colts and 19 fillies. And
you
riding know,
everything.
He literally was riding everything. Every single one of his horses that he produced was a dud.
A dud?
None of them won a single race. None of them ran. They were all duds. Isn't that interesting, Bo? It just proves genetics is a fucking jip.
Yeah, no, that means it means nothing really, man.
Do you know those people who are like, I'm going to engineer fucking the Supreme Race?
Yeah,
but they tried it with this horse and it didn't work. It
didn't work.
Like
every single one of them was like
every single one, all duds. I wrote in caps.
D-U-D-S.
Yep, just to really bring the point home. At the start of February in 1983, Shergar's second stud season was about to begin, and he was in high demand. He had a full book of 55 mares to cover.
More than any of the men in this room will ever know. Ever.
Or actually, if you're riding 55 people, fair play to you.
Yeah, no, good job.
I'd be bollocksed. You know what I mean? Anyway, Shergar, when he came back to action, I should have said when he came back to Kildare, the scenes are fucking... And there was more people out to see Shergar than there was those Olympics that came home the other day.
Fucking love this horse.
And they were throwing, like, fucking hay down on the ground and, like, flowers. And, like, honestly, this horse, they were, like, throwing, like, roses at him in the streets of fucking Kildare. Anybody who said they were from Kildare? God bless you. So he's expected to earn $1 million for the season of the 55 mares. This is during the height of a deep economic despair in Ireland. There is a recession, which I said, about 30% of the overall population at the time is unemployed. Unable to get a job, but not Shergar.
He has so many jobs.
He is more employable than anyone else in this country at the time. And he is, God's work he is doing. But unfortunately, on the evening of February 8, 1983, a meticulously planned and daring crime unfolded in Ballymoney Stud.
What are you laughing at? It's very serious.
Yeah, per horse.
R.I.P.
Anyway, at approximately 8:30 p.m., a group of three armed men, all masked and wielding firearms, entered the home of Jim Fitzgerald, the head groom at Ballymoney. Fitzgerald lived on the grounds of a stud farm in a house situated close to the stables where Shergar resided. The men were part of a larger group, and they were estimated to be between 6 and 9 individuals in the operation. Upon entering the house, one of the masked men confronted Fitzgerald and declared their intentions by stating, "We have come for Shergar. We want £2 million for him, motherfucker." This made their goal clear, and they intended to hold the horse for ransom. While the men were armed, Fitzgerald later described them as not overly rough, although one individual who carried a pistol stood out as he was very aggressive.
Oh, okay.
Oh, look at this delivery. That better not be on my tab. My card is behind that till. Anyway, securing the family. So the gang was... isn't that insane? This man was employed by the Stoat and his family got to live there with him.
And you know what? The worst thing is he absolutely loved Shergar. Like, he loved Shergar. Like, so...
Probably having sex with him.
Allegedly.
What a beautiful horse. Who could blame him? But like, such an athlete.
I just feel so bad for this guy because he genuinely friggin' adored this horse.
He did.
He probably should have just found other interests.
Listen, we're trying to have a laugh. Stop fucking making it sad. Anyway, the gang was methodical in securing the area, and Fitzgerald's family, including his wife and children, were locked into a room to prevent any interference or escapes. What would you do if someone came in and kidnapped you?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, they'd give me back in 5 minutes. They'd be like...
Would you scream or would you just be like, okay?
No, I'd be like, you know, I don't fucking care anymore. Like, what's the point of anything? Just take me out. At this point, like, I don't care.
I'd pay every money I had in the world to
would
get you
back. Would
you? Yeah, I would.
€20.
Yep, I have no money. I have bad credit as well, so I can't get a loan. This ensured that the Fitzgerald family, or that Fitzgerald himself, would comply with the demands and could not seek help or alert the authorities by essentially removing his family. Also, he didn't know what was happening to his family, so he was genuinely worried about their safety. With Fitzgerald at gunpoint, the kidnappers led him to Shergar's stable. Shergar became a prized thoroughbred, and accustomed to his handler's environment, he became excitable and nervous in the presence of unfamiliar people and the tension of the situation. The horse was reluctant and showed signs of agitation. This is me in the morning. Despite Shergar's resistance, the kidnappers were insistent and they ordered Fitzgerald to lead Shergar out of his stable and into a waiting horse box. The situation became increasingly tense as Shergar's behaviour grew more and more restless. He likely sensed the urgency and fear in the atmosphere.
He did.
He did.
Poor dude.
The kidnappers resorted to pushing Shergar into the small horse box. This was a critical moment as transporting a highly strong and valuable horse like Shergar in such conditions is very risky. However, the gang was determined to complete their mission and they continued to push. Once Shergar was loaded into the horse box, the kidnappers quickly left the stud farm and they drove away, leaving Fitzgerald and his family locked inside their house. The horse box was taken to an unknown location. Once the horse box left the Ballymanny stud with Shergar, the kidnappers turned their attention back to Jim Fitzgerald. He was then taken and forced to lie on the floor of a van with his face covered by a coat to prevent him seeing where he was being taken. I would be so sick. I would throw up.
Yeah,
if
no,
some,
she's not. She doesn't even mean that she'd be
worst
scared.
Worst motion sickness.
Up, yeah.
If someone put me in the back of a van with a coat over my head, within 5 minutes, they'd be like, she's dead.
When I get on a train with Sarah, she has to be facing the direction the train is traveling. So, like, she can't be... Like, so there's 4 seats. She has to be sitting this way if the train's going that way.
I have a special need, and people need to accept that, right? Like, I also throw up on the planes.
Yeah, a lot.
And sometimes I wet myself. All right?
It is what it is.
And sometimes when that happens, especially if I've been thrown up a lot, when I get up, Lily just rats me out. She's like, ma'am, look. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Shut up, Lily. I have a medical problem. And actually, you caused it. This didn't happen before I gave birth to you. This was a precaution taken by the gang, and they maintained anonymity.
Anonymity. Anonymity.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
To ensure their escape. The kidnappers drove Fitzgerald around for approximately 4 hours. During this time, they repeatedly warned him against contacting the Gardaí or anyone else. The threats were explicit and severe, stating that if he or his family informed the authorities, they would be killed. The kidnappers were keen in ensuring that Fitzgerald remained compliant and did not jeopardize their plan by alerting the law. After 4 hours of driving, the kidnappers released Fitzgerald near the village of Kilcock, which is located roughly about 20 miles away from Ballymanny Stud. The location was chosen to be far enough away from the stud to prevent any immediate response from the authorities, but close enough to allow Fitzgerald to return home without drawing attention to himself.
Poor guy.
They must have just drove him around in circles. It's important to note that the same day that they kidnapped, like, this actually really was well organized up until, like, the next part of the story. The same day they decided to, like, kidnap Shergar is the same day they did, like, a bloodstock sale in the stud. So there would have been horse boxes in and around the village, like for the whole day, in and out, moving around. And bloodstock sales tend to not just happen in one stud, but all over. So that entire county was just full of people moving.
So it would have been like super inconspicuous that they were going with that, yeah.
But it also caused a number of issues, because when it came that people came to be aware that Shergar had been kidnapped, the Gardaí were just absolutely overrun, because there was a ton of horse boxes being driven around. So they got loads and loads of tips, but they were all just bullshit. Yeah. And that actually was, that was the INLA's plan. They were like, we're going to do it at that time because it will absolutely give the Gardaí tons of misinformation and make it very difficult for them to figure out where we've gone.
Like, overwhelm them completely.
Yeah, just completely overwhelm them. Also, at this time, if you listen to any of the like radio interviews with the guards, we're actually like, I don't know why anybody thinks the Irish are a great nation. Honestly. Like, at one point, we got a lady that had a stone, that if you touched the stone, it would tell her geographically where things were.
Oh, my mother would fully believe that.
And guards in, like, and this was international news, right? This horse is so famous. The Gardaí, the representative for the Gardaí was like, yeah, we're bringing the woman down with the stone. And I'm not joking, he said, we're even no stone unturned. like, and he also had like the thickest country accent.
Vehicle.
Like, it,
step
honestly,
out of the vehicle.
He was just, God love him. But also, he couldn't give any information because there was literally no fucking information about this. Yeah. But he was like, we're on it, lads. We've got a psychic and we're out. And, and he's like, no stable, it'll go unchecked. We'll be in the mall. Anyway, so, before releasing him, the kidnappers gave Fitzgerald a phrase. So they said King Neptune. They instructed him to wait for their contact, and they would use this phrase when communicating with him so that he could tell that it was them. The code phrase was a method to authenticate any future communication and to make sure that they were the actual kidnappers and not the imposters. The men did not say that they were from the IRA, so yeah, allegedly, and all that stuff. And they didn't give any indication as to who they were, although one of them spoke in a very thick Northern Irish accent. And another...
Surprise, surprise.
And the other seemed to be experienced with horses.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was very good with the horse. He said, calm down.
He said, calm down.
Fitzgerald walked to the next village and he called his brother to pick him up. On arrival back at Ballymanny, he rang Giselle Drion to inform him of the theft and urged him not to call the police because of the threats that have been made. Drion attempted to reach the Aga Khan in Switzerland to inform him. He then rang Stan Cosgroves, which is Shergar's vet, who was also a shareholder. Cosgrove contacted a retired Irish army captain, Sean Berry, who was a manager of the Irish Thoroughbred Breeders Association. Barry contacted Alan Jukes, a friend of his who was the serving minister for finance, who suggested that Barry speak to Michael Noonan, the minister for justice. Noonan and Jukes told him to call the Gardaí. Like, he rang
72 people, and then the last person was like, call the guards.
Yeah, like, the Minister for Justice was like, call
just
the guards.
Just ring the guards. It's a fucking horse. Like, what do you mean?
The Minister for Justice was like, why are you calling me? And the Minister for Finance was like, we have no money. We're in one of the worst recessions in history.
Starving, like,
and
yeah.
You're calling me about a horse. Ring the guards. Anyway. So, they rang the guards, and by 4 a.m., Drion had managed to contact the Aga Khan, who told him to phone the Gardaí straight away. So he seemed like the most reasonable one of them all. The force was then contacted. The force.
The force. Did you write that?
Yeah.
The force.
That's because I was very mean to someone in work, and they told me that I was a force. And now, like, whenever I sign off emails to me, I say, kind regards, the force. So the force was contacted, but 8 hours after Shergar had been stolen and any possible trail had already gone cold. So they, like, the guards came in and they immediately put in, essentially shut down roads and barricades and were stopping people. But again, it's 8 hours after this horse is taken. It takes 3 hours to get to Armagh.
That horse is
not saying that's
gone,
where he
man.
Went, because apparently the IRA weren't involved. But, you know, So the first phone call from the thieves was made on the same night that Shergar was stolen. Well before Jim Fitzgerald, the head groom, had actually returned to Ballymoney or informed anyone of the theft. This suggests that the thieves were operating with premeditated plans and had specific individuals that they wanted to contact. So the kidnappers made their initial contact by calling Jeremy Maxwell. He's a horse trainer based in Northern Ireland, and the choice of Maxwell as the first point of contact is very intriguing. He was not directly connected to Shergar or the Aga Khan, and this unexpected choice indicates that the kidnapper's intention was to control the flow of information and perhaps gauge the reaction of the horsing community.
Why?
Because they wanted to see if they would pay for this horse.
Oh, if they get more.
So they were like ringing these people who are like journalists within that arena and being like, we want this amount of money for this horse. And so they were trying to figure out if like someone would pay.
Do you think Ben Dunn was sick?
Ben Dunn.
I think Ben Dunn was like, no one gave a fuck about me. And they're just taking a horse. And now everybody's like, how much money can we get? Ben Dunn, fuck you kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I'd say he was. Like, I'm sure he was like, why didn't they ring, like, the RTE to see how much I was worth? So, during the call, the kidnappers initially demanded a ransom of £40,000 for the safe return of Shergar. This figure was surprisingly low, given the horse's value. It is estimated to be worth several million pounds, and it's a really modest ransom. Demand could have been a tactic to ensure quick compliance, or a test to see, like, if anybody was willing to pay any form of money. Like, give me £2 and you can have this horse back.
Yeah.
The amount was later increased to £52,000, which is still significantly below the Shergar's market value. This inconsistency in the ransom amount led to speculation about the kidnappers' motives and whether they were aware of the true value of the horse. Specific instructions for the negotiations. So the kidnappers stipulated that the negotiations would only involve three specific British horse racing journalists. Derek Thompson, John Oaksey, and Peter Campling of The Sun. These journalists were well known in the horse racing world and were seen as credible intermediaries who could be trusted by both the kidnappers and the racing community. The choice of journalists as intermediaries rather than law enforcement or representatives of Shergar was unusual and added another layer of complexity to this already fucking stupid situation. When the three sports journalists arrived at the Europa, again, the Europa, and we're saying that the IRA are not involved?
Yeah, they are allegedly.
Anyway, they were contacted by phone and told to go to Maxwell's house to await further calls. On the orders from police, Thompson kept the person talking for as long as possible. The caller rang off after 80 seconds before the call could be traced. There was a series of calls to Maxwell's house later that night. And at 1:30 a.m., Colin's going for a piss. 1:30 a.m., Thompson managed to keep the caller talking for 90 seconds, which would have been long enough to trace the call. However, he was told that the person who was doing the call intercepts had finished their shift and was gone home. Isn't Ireland great? Like, this really expensive horse has been kidnapped and the kidnappers are ringing this guy.
Shergar's in the back like, come on!
This, yeah, like, come on!
Come on!
Like, the horse worth 27 million pounds and you're doing this to me? Anyway, the guy that could do that was gone. He wasn't there, so the call was not traced. But also, like, it would just be traced to a fucking payphone in,
yeah, exactly,
you
yeah.
know, somewhere in Northern Ireland. There were a series of calls to Maxwell's house later that night, and he was told that the person who was doing the call... Oh, yeah, sorry, I've said that. At 7 a.m. on the 12th of February, another call was put through to Maxwell's house, which just said things had gone wrong and the horse was dead.
Oh, I know this. Why did I gasp?
Although a committee put together by the syndicate to coordinate their response later considered that that was a hoax, Toby argues that as the call about the theft preceded Fitzgerald's return to Ballymoney, before anyone knew about the theft, that the callers used the code phrase King Neptune in their communications, it's more likely that the calls and the ensuing focus on the high-profile activity in Belfast were undertaken to distract the authorities from what was happening with Shergar elsewhere. On the 9th of February, the Thieves opened a second line of negotiation, contacting the stud directly and speaking to Dreon. The call, which came in at 4:05 p.m, was short. Dreon was not a fluent English speaker and struggled to understand the Irish accent on the call. The caller similarly had problems understanding Dreon's heavy French pronunciations. And 90 minutes later, they called and tried again.
90 minutes?
Yeah, yeah, they were like, I can't understand this French cunt. Like, when Dreon then said, please speak slowly. A demand of £2 million was made at this time and for a contact number in France, through which further negotiations could be made. Dreon provided the number of the Aga Khan's French office. It's also, at this point, it's really important to know Shergar's insured for fucking everything. He's insured for every potential outcome of his life, except being kidnapped.
Except the Ra.
So,
which is insane that they didn't think that that would be a thing that could happen.
It, but it wasn't common. Like it, I don't.
Well, they took Ben, so.
Listen.
They should have been aware of this.
This
could potentially happen.
Do you know what? In hindsight, Emma, you're correct.
I am correct.
The syndicate which owned Shergar brought in the risk and strategic consulting firm Control Risks to handle the negotiations. And I just wish that someone made a movie. Because doesn't that just seem like they're like, we brought in a strategist and they're going to do the negotiations. You know, like just Liam Neeson being like give them back.
Three lads from Cavan.
Yeah.
Just like.
They negotiated from the Paris office with a series of telephone calls over 4 days. And on Friday, the 11th of February, the negotiators demanded proof that Shergar was still alive, as there had been some speculation in the press that the poor horse was dead. The team said that a representative of the syndicate would go to the Crofton Hotel in Dublin and ask, and that they needed to ask for messages for Johnny Logan. Hold me close.
Fucking farce.
Stan Cosgrove went to the hotel and asked for any messages. He was also had armed members of the Special Detective Unit, the Domestic Security Agency of the Gardaí, were present in an undercover role also. No message was delivered and Cosgrove returned home after waiting. Shortly afterwards, the negotiators received a phone call from the thieves, angry at the presence of the police, threatening that if any members of the gang were captured or killed, the negotiators and police would be murdered in retribution. On Saturday, 12th of February, the thieves contacted the negotiators and said that proof had been left in the Rosneree Hotel. When this was picked up, it contained several Polaroid pictures. It just showed Shergar.
Just like various poses. With like a hat.
Him at the beach.
But like one of those like fake beach bag.
Yeah, yeah. Like him with his head through, you know, those like strongman ones at the beach.
So, R.I.P. though, R.I.P. Yeah.
So they picked, it contained several Polaroid pictures showing Shergar. Some of the pictures showed the horse's head next to the copy of the Irish News, so dated funny. The 11th of February. Cosgrove saw the photograph and confirmed it was definitely him.
It's definitely Shergar. Like, it could have been that. We don't know. That. You could have just got a random picture.
Could have been Canva Horse.
Canva Horse, yeah.
Although he added it wasn't proof that the horse was alive. At that point, you'd want to get much more definitive evidence. If you'd have seen the complete horse.
Oh, my God. Like, he's like holding the horse's head up or something?
It was just his head.
Oh.
It was just the horse's head. It was a lot of shots of the horse's head and newspaper. But it was just his head. In a telephone call from the teams to the negotiators at 10:40 on the 12th of February, it was explained that the syndicate were not satisfied with the pictures of the horse, which they explained did not constitute enough proof. The caller told the negotiators, if you're not satisfied, that's it. The call was ended and the teams never made further contact. The syndicate attempted to re-establish contact with the gang, but there was no response to newspaper requests to do so. Like, they were putting out newspaper like articles to be like, please get in touch.
Please.
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 We miss him so much.
I hope he's having a great time. The disappearance of Shergar remains one of the most perplexing and tragic episodes in the history of horse racing. Despite extensive investigations and numerous theories, Shergar's body has never been recovered. or definitely identified. Various sources and theories have emerged over the years regarding the possible location of Shergar's remains, with one prominent theory suggesting that the horse's body may have been buried in County Leitrim in Ireland. So, some of the theories on Shergar's remains. So, there's a possible burial site, according to several sources, including journalists, of O'Callaghan of the Sunday Telegraph and The Observer. There is a theory that Shergar's remains were buried in Ognishaleen, a small village close to Ballinamore in County Leitrim. This area has been speculated as a possible burial site due to various pieces of circumstantial evidence and reports. O'Callaghan reported that the remains might have been buried on the farm of an IRA veteran from the 1940s. This connection to the IRA veteran is significant because it ties into border speculations that the Irish Republican Army might have been involved in the kidnapping, allegedly. Given the IRA's history and connections, the theory suggests a possible motive or involvement in the disposal of Shergar's body. Ballinamore is known for its strong Republican sentiment, which has earned its nickname of the Falls Road of the South. This nickname refers to the Falls Road area in Belfast, a well-known Republican stronghold during the Troubles, and a fucking great place. If you ever get to go to the Falls Road, it's great crack.
It is.
And you get a pink pasty on the Falls Road. I know I've talked about it in depth on the podcast, but if you get a chance to have a pink pasty, you should. Change your life. And it's good for vegetarians as well.
Yeah.
Not vegans, what?
Up the veggies.
Strong Republican ties to the religion to the region could also explain why such a location would be considered in connection with the disappearance of Shergar. There have been several claims of an equine skeleton being that of Shergar. Des Leden, a specialist horse vet with knowledge of equine pathology.
Bullshit.
Listen. Has assisted the Gardaí in several instances where a horse's remains may have been those of Shergar's. He retains some of the strands of hair from Shergar's mane.
Get a grip.
And tail, which he says may contain sufficient DNA to confirm his identification.
Here, how long do horses live?
I don't know. Anybody know?
What?
No, how long? Wow.
Wow. This man is at home wanking over this horse's mane.
So this horse is defo dead, but like there's no way. Okay, cool. All right.
Oh, okay, so
I thought maybe.
Like, I was like, tonight, bringing him in. Shergar.
Craig will just come.
And we just bring him out of the lift. And then we get selfies with him in the laughter lounge. Anyway, the theory that the IRA was involved in the kidnapping of Shergar is supposedly supported by various police and intelligence sources who considered the IRA as the most likely suspects. During the 1980s, the Irish Republican movement, which included both the IRA and Sinn Féin, pursued a dual strategy known as the Armalite ballot approach. This strategy involves a combination of armed struggles and the political engagement. The armed struggle was characterised by attacks and bombings, while Sinn Féin focused on gaining electoral success and expanding its political influence. It's done it now. It's number one up the north.
Number one?
Number one. Sinn Féin. The best thing that ever happened to me up the north is there's a taco place beside the Blue Fish in Belfast. I can't remember the name of the river in the Belfast. Thank you. And there's a like taco place there. And during COVID, Sinn Féin made sure it stayed open.
Oh, I did hear that.
Yeah. And Sinn Féin, like members of Sinn Féin were there like when you went to buy tacos. And I was living up there when it happened and it was great.
Hey, remember that place we went to for the photo shoot?
I was just about to say.
Oh my God.
What was it called?
Deke's Diner.
Deke, baby.
Diner.
Do you all know of Deke's Diner? Don't
that
go.
Man, we walked in and, okay, first and foremost, it hasn't been cleaned in near on 75 years,
no.
First and foremost. And then it was literally just photographs of Gerry Adams everywhere.
It was.
Just Gerry Adams.
He had loads of photos of Gerry Adams, Bernie Hearn and Mary Lou.
Yeah.
And then what's the guy that died that was in the IRA and then was in Sinn Féin? Yeah. Then Martin McGuinness. And then Deke was like, it doesn't matter what your political beliefs are. As long as you've got two legs and arms, you're always welcome in Deke's. And I was like, what is happening?
But I also feel like it does matter what your political beliefs are.
And then we went in the back and he was like, that's my COVID bar.
Yeah, he fully opened a bar during COVID and had everybody in there.
Fake bar during COVID.
Like,
and he was like, we had some great times in there.
We love Deke though. What
oh,
a guy.
Was, honestly, he came down to open up the place so we could get our
photos
taken.
Like, I put my hand on the table and it was like... But do go there. Enjoy a sandwich or whatever. I don't know what they do there.
It was all like chipper food.
Yeah, it was there, yeah.
Anyway, big up Deke.
Big up the Deke.
He said, this is Deke's diner. Anyway, the financial pressure on the IRA was evident and they needed funding. The IRA's activities included purchasing arms and explosives required substantial financial resources. The costs associated with maintaining an armed struggle, including acquiring weaponry and funding operations, placed a significant financial burden on the organization. Sure, you know yourself.
Like steal a horse.
You know when you have
Excellent.
To buy bombs. You know, we've
Allegedly.
All been there. Sinn Féin's role at the time, Sinn Féin required funds for political activities, including advertising, keeping taco trucks open, campaigning, salaries for the personal, and the dual approach meant that the movement's overall budget was under massive constraint. The annual budget for the Irish Republican Movement was estimated between 2 million and 5 million. This budget was essential for sustaining both the arms and political aspects for the strategy, and the movement was always under financial pressure. So they were like, let's fucking rob a horse.
Rob a horse.
Let's do it. In October 1981, the Army Council, the leadership group of the organisation, approved the kidnappings of Ben Dunne, as noted above. This is a suspicion that per financial outcome led to the kidnap of Shergar. So they were essentially like, we're going to get at least 2 million for kidnapping Ben Dunne. And then Ben Dunne's family were like, we don't even like that cunt. Like, you can keep him. So they didn't get the 2 million. So then they were like, let's go after Shergar.
And they only asked for 52 grand.
Well, that was just to distract everybody.
Oh, okay.
Also, people will kind of forgive you for killing a horse, but not a person. So they were just trying to brand into politics. That's what I think, in any way.
Not anymore.
In 1999, Sean O'Callaghan, a former member of the IRA who had been working with the organisation as a supergrass for the Gardaí since 1980, he published his autobiography. He states that the plot to steal and ransom Shergar was devised by Kevin Malone, a leading IRA member who sat at the Army Council. Malone came up with the idea while serving time in Portlaoise prison. Malone was put in charge of a special operation unit with orders to raise several million pounds and command put into Malone's unit. These included the IRA members Jerry Fitzgerald, Paul Stewart, Rab Butler and Nicky Keogh. 2 weeks after Shergar's kidnap, Jerry Fitzgerald told O'Callaghan he'd been involved in the theft and that Shergar had been killed early on in the process after the horse panicked and no one present could cope with him. In the process, the horse damaged its left leg and a decision was made to kill it. In his 1999, the autobiography of O'Callaghan states that Shergar was killed within days of the theft. In an interview with the RTE Irish broadcaster in 2004, he stated Jerry Fitzgerald strongly suggested Shergar had been killed and that the IRA then kept up a deception that the horse was still alive and in their care, and that's why the Polaroids looked like a dead horse. Oh. Kevin O'Connor, a journalist with the RTE, identifies three parts of the gang, a section to undertake high-profile activity in Belfast to focus media attention on the north, one part negotiation discreetly with Aga Khan, and one part guarding the horse. According to O'Callaghan, in August 1983, an effort to raise the money they failed to do with Shergar's theft, Fitzgerald and his group attempted to kidnap the businessman Galen Weston in his home in County Wicklow. The Gardaí had been forewarned and took over the house while Weston was in the UK. After a gun battle, Jerry Fitzgerald, Keogh and three others were arrested. They received a long prison sentence, and O'Callaghan stated that essentially the same team that went to kidnap Shergar then went to kidnap Galen Weston. No arrests have ever been made in the relation to Shergar's theft. The IRA have never admitted any role in the theft or its aftermath. Pat Mallon and Keogh deny any involvements in the events. Toby raises a query over O'Callaghan's story, saying that the IRA informant was a confessed informer whose life depended on his ability to weave a convincing web of lies. Without more evidence, O'Callaghan's story is just an interesting story. In 2008, a special investigation by the Sunday Telegraph obtained information from another IRA member who said that O'Callaghan had not been told the full story because the gang was so embarrassed by what happened. They said that a vet that the IRA had arranged to look after Shergar did not turn up because his wife threatened to leave him. Sorry.
I fully believe that.
Like, could you imagine? Where are you going? Out to deal with that fucking horse. I leave you, you cunt. Once the IRA realised that Aga Khan was not going to pay, the Army Council ordered the horse to be released. The extensive search by the Gardaí hampered any release, and Malin thought he was under close surveillance and that releasing the horse was way too risky, so he ordered it should be killed. The IRA source told the newspaper that two men went into the stable where Shergar was being held and that one carried a machine gun. Shergar was machine gunned to death. There was blood everywhere and the horse even slipped on his own blood. There was lots of cussing and swearing because the horse wouldn't die. Isn't, like, that's like a fucking, that's like one of those stupid movies you'd watch.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
It was a very bloody death. With no definitive news of Shergar's whereabouts and the Gardaí limiting information they released to the press, the media took speculation to cover the story. Berlaine observes that in reporting the Shergar case, the press speculation was remarkable for its enthusiasm and its inaccuracy over a long period of time. Such media claims, including that Shergar had been stolen by Colonel Gaddafi as part of a deal to supply arms to the IRA, that according to a tabloid newspaper, the Sunday Sport, Shergar was spotted being ridden by the missing Lord Lucan, that a Middle Eastern horse breeder had stolen him for stud, and that the mafia had undertaken the act to punish the Aga Khan over a previous sale of a horse which has gone badly. 8 weeks after Shergar was stolen, Stan Cosgrove was approached by senior detectives within the Gardaí who introduced him to Dennis Minogue, a horse trainer. Minogue claimed to have contact with the IRA, who had shown him a photograph of Shergar, that he could help get Shergar released on a ransom of £80,000. The Gardaí asked Cosgrove to assist them in a sting operation to lure the thieves out. Cosgrove agreed, and on the 20th of July 1983, Detective Garda Martin Kinnerons assisted in the operation. He says he put the money in the boot of his car in a remote village, which Minogue was to collect, and once the horse had been released the following day, the deed was done, he'd pick up the money and that the horse would be released. The following day, Kinrones found that the boot of his car had been forced open and the money was missing. Minogue had also disappeared and the money was never recovered.
Shocker.
A subsequent internal Gardaí inquiry dismissed Kinrones from the force for breaching Garda regulations. In an interview in 2018, he retired and reiterated his long-stated innocence and said, "When it all went wrong, everyone jumped for the high ground. They all denied they had anything to do with the ransom." So pretty much Gardaí stole that money. And yep. There was no horse.
Allegedly.
At the Aga Khan.
Sarah Jane Heffernan.
The Gardaí stole that money. The Aga Khan had several reasons for non-payment of the ransom, including that he was only one of the 35 members that could have negotiated or paid on the behalf of the others. He was unsure whether Shergar would be returned even if the money was paid, and the concern that if the kidnappers' demands were met, it would make very high-value horse in Ireland a target for future theft. The shareholders were divided on the approach. Brian Sweeney, a veteran of the American horse racing industry, taught, "If you ask a mother who has a child that has been kidnapped if a ransom should be paid, I would think the answer would be yes, and quickly. This is a horse!
It's a horse!"
Another shareholder, Lord Derby, disagreed and said, "If the ransom money was paid for the horse, then there would be a danger of all of the other horses being kidnapped throughout the years to come, and that could simply not be tolerated." In the end, the Shergar kidnapping saga turned into an unintended comedy of errors, misconnections that could rival any scriptwriter's wildest imaginations. Despite the drama and tension and the high stakes, it's worth noting that this extraordinary tale had some amusing twists and is the most Irish crime of them all.
Truly.
Good job, dude. Excellent job. R.I.P. Sugar.
R.I.P. Sugar.
Poor little dude. Is everyone okay?
Is everybody okay?
Good. Thank you again so much for coming out, by the way. We really fucking appreciate it. Thank you very, very, very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Especially
thank
you. You're fucking fabulous. This girl in the front, I'm obsessed with. You're stunning. So thank you, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
I think it's time to fucking end this charade right now. Podcast finished. Live show finished. Craig wants to know, when does this show end?
Now.
To which the answer is...
Now.
Right now.
Yay! Thank you all so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hello, folks. Anyway, give it up for everyone, Sarah Jane. Hey, oh, bip, 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 bip. Come back, don't leave just yet. Look at them fucking dashing for the door as if their lives fucking depended on it. Anybody who's been to this shindig like this before knows that we were not actually finished right now. We have a little tradition around here, which we've changed a little bit. So, folks, we're going to do a medley of show-ending songs. So thank you very much. Once again, please put your hands together for Emma and Sarah Jane. Because we all know it's hard to get up here, like talk for 2 hours, but they do it for you. You spend your hard-earned money and they come in here, they talk at you, and y'all enjoy it. Because you know what? At the end of the day, you're a beautiful crowd of fine feminist women, and God bless you for it. This is a song just for you. Turn me up my headphones. All the owl woman moves. Men, we're so tired of men. We're done with Ben, Larry, Frank, and Ken. Fair, we've been treated unfair. We're sick of Dell and Tupperware. Burn your bra, my sweet Lorraine. You're gonna be a feminist. Hairy legs you must not shave if you wanna be a feminist. Oh, when they try to flatter you, crumble when they mansplain to you. We should castrate them all of football. Tired of these half-witted egotists and their dirty old penises and their wrinkly balls, especially the balls. Let's go! You're required to sing along for the remainder of this. Well, you can tell by the way I move my hand, I'm a jerking man, don't you understand? I don't need love to get me hot. I'm made it alone during business hours, in the bathroom, under the desk, or even by the file effects. Coffee room, water tech, and picky where I have a crack. You can find me sweating at a 11:15 when I'm... It's a gross approximation to a HR violation when I'm... Come on! Whacking at work, whacking at work. Whacking at work. Ha, 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 ha.
gonna get right out of here. Laughter Lounge, the floor is yours. Because Emma's cat can and Emma's cat do. Emma's cat can and Emma's cat do. Who Emma's cat can and Emma's cat do. Emma's cats can and Emma's cats do. Feminist songs for Emma's two cats. 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 Thank you! I will get that right someday. Thanks a million for being here, Laughter Lounge. We really fucking appreciate it. Thank you so much.